traveling the world, searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hey, racing fans, harness racing, thoroughbred, quarter horse, equestrians, polo, rodeo. Did I miss pleasure riding, western? Did I miss anything, Scott Miller?
No, sir, you did not. You do as you always do. You covered it all.
I didn't want to leave anybody out of there, but we're here. This is the International Equine Network. I'm Steve Wolf, and, of course, with us, our founder of IEN, Scott Miller. And our first half hour, we're going to talk about flying turns and get into a little bit of harness racing news. I guess the first thing up is the fact that we are nearing the month of May and everything is still in lockdown. There are currently three or four thoroughbred tracks in North America that are open. There's also harness racing in Sweden and two tracks in Australia. And that covers the world of horse racing, which is unbelievable what this virus has caused and shut down. And because of it now, races are being postponed. This week, the $200,000 Prix d'Été for four-year-old pacers was canceled at the Hippodrome 3R for 2020. Then Freehold Raceway, which hosts the first week of May, the Dexter Cup Trot, which is the first major Grand Circuit event leading towards the Hamiltonian, has been canceled for 2020, along with its filly counterpart, the Lady Suffolk. And Scott, as we go on, there's going to be more postponements or cancellations as this quarantine continues.
Yeah, you know, you're right, Steve. And I think the biggest problem that we have now is the decision makers in the industry for all breeds. They just don't know what to do and how to do it because they don't have enough information on when we can start getting out and about.
That's correct. Each state's government is deciding what is essential and what is not. And, of course, in Florida, Gulfstream Park and Tampa Bay Downs are able to race their thoroughbreds. Pompano Park, of course, once the outbreak started, they canceled the rest of their season, which would have gone into May. But there are some major races that are being postponed. The North America Cup, which is one of the top three-year-old races, that's been postponed. In Sweden, at the end of May, is one of the world's top races called the Elite Lop. It's held at the Solvalla Racecourse. It's two heats in one day to declare the winner. And right now, they're not changing their date, but they're looking to go fanless. And usually there are between 40 and 45,000 people that come out for the Elite Lop. Now, unless they move it, they're going to have no fans there. Just race for simulcast viewing.
Well, Steve, let me ask you this. Now that, you know, they're canceling all these races and a lot of trainers, you know, schedule their training programs out months in advance, how are they going to adjust the season? Let's say it starts back up in September. Are they going to re-race any of these? Like the Kentucky Derby was supposed to be May 5th or May 2nd, and now it's going to be September 5th. Would they do anything like that for harness racing?
Well, they're going to postpone them. I mean, there's another Grand Circuit, the Courier and Ives for three-year-olds, another trotting event at the Meadows. That's been postponed for now. And it really all depends when each state's government says it's okay to start racing, even with fanless racing. I know tracks, you know, most of the tracks would love to be able to open up and start racing right now. I know Jeff Gorrell at the Meadowlands had talked about the 1st of May. Then he talked about the 15th of May. Now we fear that's on hold. And I guess the best indicator is the population at a place like where you are, Scott, at Sunshine Meadows. Has anyone packed up and left yet?
We've had a few, but they've gone to their own farms like in Indiana, you know, and Pennsylvania. But for the most part, the majority of our people are still here, and they're telling us that they are going to make a decision on June 1st. So they're going to wait and let, you know, see what pans out for, you know, all the different tracks. And one of the things is like the backside of some of these tracks are not open, you know, and they've got nowhere to go.
Right. If the meet isn't even close to opening, they're not going to have any horses there. And wherever these horsemen are, I know, and for some of these stables, folks, you have to understand, a Tony Alagna, 80 horses. In order to move 80 horses, the cost is, I don't want to say astronomical, because they do it and the owners end up paying, but why would you even think of spending that money and moving, you know, from Sunshine Meadows to Gateway Farm in New Jersey just to, you know, do the same thing you were doing down here? And, I mean, it's really crushing the industry. And, you know, we've talked about the domino theory, how, you know, if the horses can't get out, well, then the truckers can't go anyplace. Guys aren't using their vehicles, so the vehicle sales, trucks, trailers, cars, whatever, they're not being bought and sold. I mean, it's just the trickle-down effect of how this is affecting our lives is what you can just see in racing. I mean, if you can't do it normally, then you're not going to be able to do it with racing. But we have to hope that the governments will allow at least fanless late racing so that the horsemen can start, you know, racing for purses and make some money. But as for rescheduling, there's going to be a lot of cancellation of races. I don't know how, you know, that if they allow racing in June, then fine, then the season might be able to be saved. But people are going to start backing up their stake races, and then they're going to have conflicts. And the thoroughbred quarter horse, show horses, everyone is going to have major, major conflicts and fighting for fan attendance and audience.
Well, you know, Steve, one of the things that they're worried about here and at our thoroughbred facility is the fact that, let's say they do open up, like, say, New York or New Jersey or what have you, what they're worried about is it going to be safe? They want to make sure that it's going to be safe. So consequently, you have to think, well, if they open up, let's say, on June 1st, we're going to let them run another 2 or 3 weeks to see what happens and then go up. You know, that's what a lot of these guys
are going to do. You're absolutely right. And they're talking already about only allowing, if they have just whipless racing, what they're going to do is they're going to allow maybe, if a race paddock can hold 100 horses and there's 10 in a field, they're only going to let 3 races go into the race paddock at a time. And the others will have to stay in holding until the first race is done, and then the third race can come in. And when the second race is done, the fourth race can come in. And it's, you know, it's something that everyone, I think, is working on now, because that looks like the best case scenario for racing will be fanless in the beginning. When they will allow fans to come, I don't know. But my feeling is the way this virus can be spread, as long as, I guess, if everyone wears a mask, I have no problem going to a racetrack, you know, with a crowd of people. But again, the government's going to make that decision, and we hope we can get a positive one soon. I think the biggest fear of...
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, the biggest fear of all, and what we need is someone to come up with a vaccine. And once there's a vaccine being out there that people can take that'll stop the coronavirus, then the world can start living again.
Well, you know, Steve, one of the things that the grooms are talking about here in South Florida is the fact that if they open up, like, say, the Meadowlands, would it be every stall would have a horse in it, every groom, you know, their grooms would have their horses, or would they have to have the social distance, you know, the 6 feet?
I think they'll have them apart. Well, they can very easily do that if they, you know, if their paddock holds 100 horses, and you want to use, you know, 60 of them, you're going to be able to divide them up and go from there.
going to be tough. I tell you, the toughest decision they got to make is when they make the decision to open up, they got to be pretty doggone certain, you know, that this thing is over and it's not going to flare up again, because the worst thing that could happen is you get all these horses, you get all the equestrian industry out to their normal, schedule, and then this thing flares up again, you know, it would literally close the business down.
Right. If something were to go wrong and grooms or trainers or drivers were to start coming up, you know, with the virus, then yeah, that's definitely going to be a problem. But I think we've reached a point where we need to start doing some things to start getting back to a normal life once again, because we've had these viruses before, and they've been worse than what we're looking at here. What the problem is that we were able to pinpoint the virus and take care of it, whereas now everyone in the world is frantically trying to come up with either a cure, which if they don't have a cure for the common cold, it's tough to get a cure for this virus, but they can come up with a vaccine. And if they come up with a vaccine, I realize everybody gets a flu shot every year, and a lot of people still get the flu because of it. Regardless, if they can come up with a vaccine that's going to help the majority of people and get it out there, then I think life can become normal again. But in the racing business, yes, if somebody starts racing, let's say the Meadowlands, and then somebody gets sick or whatever that was at the paddock, then I fear that they'll shut it down.
Well, racing at different places, the Meadowlands, Yonkers, so forth, Saratoga. One of the problems that they were talking about is, are you going to open that up for outside horses to come in? Would the horses that are at Saratoga and Meadowlands be able to go back and forth to other tracks, or would they be able to stay, you know, just keep that backside closed just to the people, for the Meadowlands?
Well, I don't think they can do that, because the Meadowlands is a shipping barn. In other words, everybody ships in.
Right.
There's no longer is there a stall area there. So you're going to have people shipping from all over the place. And as long as they try and do their best practices, I think things can definitely work out. Another problem is all these stake payments. I mean, April 15th was a big stake payments day. And we realized if a stake race is canceled, then all the money gets refunded to everybody. But there are stake races that needed to be paid on April 15th. There were some stake races that were delayed. They said, oh, we'll give you an extra month. So they moved everything a month ahead. So what it comes up is you need a scorecard to keep up with. If you have even a 20-horse stable, you need a scorecard to follow up and see, do I have to make this New York Sire Stake payment now? Do I still have to make the Courier and Ives race because, you know, it was postponed? Where's the race going to go? Where's my stable going to be? I mean, it is. And then again, use Tony Alani, use Casey Coleman, you know, 80 horses, 50 horses, trying to keep up the stake payments on every single one wasn't easy to begin with. Now it's twice as hard.
Right. Well, you know, the thing that's got me concerned is the sponsorships that are out there for, you know, like the Meadowlands and Churchill and places like that. You know, the sponsors are taking a big hit by not having races, you know. And
right.
I just wonder how many of the sponsors are going to drop out and say, for example, like say, we can't sponsor this race at Gulfstream, in September because University of Miami's playing Florida. You know, and we'd rather go with University of Florida and Miami than that race at Gulfstream.
That's
going to be interesting.
It has a lot to do with contracts and whether there are clauses in there in the event that the race is canceled, do X amount of money goes back. Because in a lot of sponsorships, you got upfront money, and that upfront money is immediately used to buy media, to buy 5,000, 10,000 baseball caps, with the names on it and everything else. So it's tough. It all depends on contracts, and a lot of people are private contractors. So if the race meet, you know, is not going to go on, but they have a contract to pay X amount of money, you know, a lot of work is going to have to get done. It's just mind-boggling, you know, everything that has to take place. And the most important thing is to be able to get some racing started, and that tracks maybe in the Midwest that aren't affected as bad, I can't see why they wouldn't be able to start up first. I realize Yonkers, Meadowlands, Freehold, they all want to race, but they're in the hotbed of where coronavirus spread from. And so I don't, you know, I think it's tougher for them to get permission from their government. I mean, certainly you can see Mr. Cuomo on the news every day talking about the state of New York and what's going on. And it's just, you know, there's not much positive news coming out of it.
Right. But now what about the sales, Steve? We talked last show about, you know, the sales, how they had to cancel the Keeneland sales and, you know, a lot
yeah,
of the
there, there's something coming out right here, and that is there's a few things we want to talk about today, and some of them are positive, some of them are not. But in June, the Midwest mixed sale is planned. They don't have a date in June yet, but they're looking to have not just people in the arena, but also online bidding. And although they're doing it a little bit differently, I don't know how anyone, unless they get the horses vetted out and stuff, can will want to do a lot of bidding online. And I think it's tough to even try and have a sale without knowing what the future of racing is going to be and what stakes are these horses eligible to. Are they just overnight horses? I mean, how can you spend 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000, 150,000 or more on a racehorse if there's no place to race?
That's true. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. A lot of these guys go to the mixed sales or to the two-year-old and training sales and hoping to buy, you know, a horse, catch lightning in the bottom, and 3 weeks later win a race.
Well, exactly, and right now that's not going to happen. So how can you start prepping, horses? There's probably some great three-year-olds out there that didn't race much at two, and now they're stronger and better and ready to go, and no place to race. I mean, it's great to have the idea of the sale, and you can do it online to some degree, but I just, at this point here, I would not be announcing a June sale unless they know something that we don't know, that racing is going to kick up again, because it's already the 16th of April. So any track that is even considering opening, even if they give a 60-day box, you know, that they had to have raced in the last 60 days, which isn't going to happen, are they going to have qualifiers and need a couple weeks to get everybody adjusted? I mean, we just have to wait and see. It's right now, it's just day to day on what's going on.
Go ahead. Right now, like you were saying with those sales, Eric Cherry has the on gate. That might be the best avenue going right there because, you know, let's face it, if you got a horse that's ready to run, somebody might want to buy that horse hoping that, you know, racing will open up, but at least he's ready to go.
Exactly. And we had Eric on last week. He talked about some of the sales, and I know friends of mine owned a horse by the name of Simple Kind of Man, and I think they sold that to dissolve the partnership because one of the guys, the trainer of the horse was, and part owner was one of those indicted, Rene Allard. And I think they put a minimum of $20,000, they'd let the horse go. Well, it went for $35,000, which, you know, to me is a great price on a horse that has no place to race. And this horse was racing right up in time. It's the perfect example of somebody purchasing a horse and hoping that as when racing comes back, you know, that give this horse, I guess, a rest or keep him in shape somehow, you know, maybe take him to Olympia Downs or Sunshine Meadows to qualify.
There you go.
Which is something, I mean, there are three racetracks currently, and they're all in Florida, and they're the only ones in harness racing that are doing anything. They're holding qualifying races, and that, of course, is Sunshine Meadows, Olympia Palm Beach, which is formerly the South Florida Trotting Center right down the road, and then up in, Spring Garden in Northern Florida, they held their first two qualifiers. But other than that, there's no place to go. No place to go.
But Steve, do you think a lot of these partnerships that are involved in these horses, do you think that there's a lot of people getting out of the business because of this virus?
I don't know, because I'm not in touch with enough of these people. I mean, I'm doing the best practice. I'm not going out to the farms, so I can't see, you know, these people. I guess, yes, I could talk to them on Facebook. I don't see a lot of people, you know, getting mad and saying, I'm out of here. I haven't heard anything about that. I think everyone is sort of sitting tight and waiting to see what happens. But I just feel bad. I mean, Brad Grant, who is a wealthy man and has been a great, great supporter of harness racing and buying horses. Now, he may have partners or not, but he spent $1.1 million on Maverick, the trotting yearling, and he's training sensational. But there's no place to race. What are you going to do? And every year you spent $1.1 million for a yearling, plus I'm sure insurance money and everything else, and you're stuck. And that's the same with the thoroughbreds. And weren't they paying $6 million, $5 million for some of those yearlings? And where are they going with them? You know, are they hoping for the Breeders' Cup? I mean, that's about it. I mean, and that's not until October, November, depending on how the Triple Crown goes. I mean, there's so much going on here. But before we switch over to At the Wire, there's a couple things I do want to mention. One, sadly, the former USTA president and longtime race secretary at Maywood Park and Balmoral Park in Chicago, Phil Langley, passed away this past week at age 83. And he was a prominent owner in his day, president of the USTA for, I think it was 16 years, race secretary for nearly 40 years in Chicago. You know, very sad at a time like this. There's some positive things, too, we need to talk about. And the United States Trotting Association, if you go to their website, ustrotting.com, you're going to see about the greatest horse races of all time. And what they've done, they've simulated horse races, matching unbelievable, you know, great horses against each other. And to give you an example, the first round took place on the pacing side, and it was the world champion mare Be a Magician who got defeated by world champion Niatros. I mean, it would have been great to see those two race. And on the trotting side, Mac Lobel beat Muscles Yankee. And they do it by a percentage of margin. And then they have second rounds. And these are some great things the USTAs and other people are doing to give people something to go on and something to talk about. Matching up, you know, it would be like matching up Secretariat against Seabiscuit and stuff like that in the thoroughbred world. I mean, the USTA plenty of credit for coming up for that. And I think Ryan Clements is one who set that all up. Another biggie, another positive thing that happened, the Kim Rinker, the president of the United States Trotting Association, announced today that Gordon Waterstone, who works for the Horsemen and Fair World, harnessracing.com, has been named to the Harness Writers Hall of Fame Screening Committee. And there's only six people that can, you know, that have that honor, and it's a 6-year term. But Gordon will be one of those six people who will decide on who gets nominated for the Hall of Fame. And yours truly, I'm very fortunate I was nominated and put on the screening committee last year, but Gordon's a good man. He's very knowledgeable. But it then, with every positive thing, you have to look at the negative. And usually July 4th weekend is the Hall of Fame weekend where all the people get inducted into the Hall of Fame. And this year it's Tim Tietrich and Bill Popfinger and Jeff Gorel. Is there going to be a dinner? Is there going to be any racing that weekend? We don't know yet. And they are unable to sell tickets or do anything. And I would hate to see this canceled because people wait their whole life to get inducted into the Hall of Fame. And to have the event canceled or postponed the next year would just be a shame.
Yeah, well, you know, that's one thing about the virus. I mean, you look at the people, you know, there's people that are struggling to get food. I know you were saying earlier today it took you a considerable amount of time to go to the grocery store, you know, and, you know, get what you need. And you know, and again, horse racing and sports in general, it's on the same thing as like you are when you go to the grocery store. When you go to the grocery store, you got to get everything that you need, and you don't know how long you have to make that last. And I think that's where the horse industry is. You know, they just don't know what to do, and they don't know how far that they're going to go. You know, 30 days, well, like New York. New York just added another 2 weeks to their stay-at-home policy. So we know one thing for sure, that they're not going to be doing anything in New York for harness or thoroughbred or show horses, you know, in the next 2 weeks. And so, you know, what?
No,
after
I know.
Decide in 2 weeks what they're going to do, you know, then it could be another 2 weeks.
Right. It's not. And another announcement that really doesn't have anything to do, but it's a positive thing, Hanover Shoe Farm. And their executive vice president, Dr. Bridget Jablonski, announced today that the Hanover Shoe Farm has established a $250,000 matching fund grant to support the restoring of full integrity to the harness racing industry. Because I guess fortunately for our sport, the virus came out just when the federal government indicted the 29 harness and thoroughbred trainers, you know, for drugging horses and
right.
A whole litany of major things. And here Hanover Shoe Farms has put up a $250,000, which I'm sure they'll get it matched. They'll have $500,000 to keep up on the integrity and get the positive word out there that our sport is good and that we've found a large number of people who don't belong in the sport, and hopefully they're going to be kicked out for life after once the courts system is done with their trials.
Oh, exactly. I think this virus has kind of given, you know, the sport industry a timeout, gives us a time to evaluate where we're at and where we're going and how we're going to do it.
Right, because if it wasn't for the virus, the indictments would be all over the front pages. And our racing industry would be headed towards extinction. But
you got that right.
Yeah, because there was nothing else going on at the time, and the virus just superseded everything. But hats off to Russell Williams and Hanover Shoe Farm and Dr. Jablonski for doing this $250,000 grant. I'm sure others will donate too. And hats off to all the horsemen's associations and racetracks that are helping provide food and medical care if needed for both horses and humans, especially for the grooms that are, you know, suffering the most. You know, it's tough to get paid, but you got to keep working. And as I said, these horses are like our children. They have to be cared for 24/7.
Well, you know, Steve, the long run of this virus could be very damaging, but it's a wake-up time for all of us to look at our jobs, our lives, you know, what we're doing, how we conduct our life on a daily basis. There's going to be major things that we're going to be changing, you know, for example, like handshakes. you know, and high fives and things like that that you see at the racetracks when your horse wins. You know, how many people are hugging and handshaking, and you know, what's that going to be like when racing comes back and you're not, you can't do that? You know,
well,
takes a little bit out of the victory.
I don't know if they can tell you if they're going to allow people to go back into civilization and. I'm sorry. By that point, if you haven't gotten the virus or something, I have no problems with a handshake or a high five when you made a big bet or something like that. I mean, we have to try and get back. I mean, people say it'll never be normal again. And I tell those people, you're wrong. You'll make it as normal as you want to. And you know, we can't just stop living in. We're not going to live in masks the rest of our lives. It's not going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been fortunate. The way I look and the way I act, I've been practicing social distancing for the last 43 years.
Oh, so I understand that.
My life hadn't changed much.
And fortunately, you know, as we said before, Scott, you and I, we got that face for radio. That's for sure.
You got that right. You got that right. But I think it's all going to come around. And you know, especially like with the thoroughbred industry, Steve, I think it's going to damage the thoroughbred industry like there's no tomorrow, because they're sitting on 2-year-olds right now that are supposed to be in training, you know, ready to go to the sales. That's not going to happen. You're trying to get them ready for, you know, a July or August, September start, you know, in the fall at Keeneland and Churchill and places like that. It's not going to happen. You know, and you know, you got to reevaluate everything.
Right. And places are, you know, doing things to take care of their people and keep everything going. Up in Ontario, the Ontario Racing, they've notified all the industry participants who have applied, put in applications, that they're going to use purse funds that, you know, are remaining eligible because there's no racing giving. Being able to give them out to people, which I think that's super great, and that all the racetracks should use that as the best practice to help these people get by, because it's not going to last forever. It's going to end, and if we're prepared with how we're going to treat everything and take care of it and have racing, and that way as soon as we get the go-ahead, we can get started right away, we're going to be better off and bring some excitement, because I know I know people are looking for stuff to watch and to wager on. They're looking for content on their TV because that's all they got.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that sometimes you don't think about is you look at a horse's career, no matter whether it's show horses, standardbreds, thoroughbreds, what have you, and you kind of look at what they did when they were a 2-year-old. Well, those 2-year-old races aren't going to happen, and they're not, you know, so their 2-year-old career is literally gone, you know. And then you look at the 3-year-olds that were developing late, like, say, for the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness and the Belmont, you know, they've got nowhere to showcase that talent, you know.
Right.
And it's going to be interesting, because, like with the show horses, for example, you know, it's important that you're in Lexington in April and May because of 3-day Rolex, you know, and all the big shows that they have there. And then they go to Socrates, Thermo, California, you know, and to Europe. Well, that's not going to happen this year. You know, they're all going to end up in the same spot at the same time trying to conduct a show. And how do you do that? Same thing with racing about the Kentucky Derby. The Triple Crown is just totally shot this year, because in order to have the Triple Crown, you would have to have September 5th, the Kentucky Derby. 2 weeks later, you would have the Preakness. And 3 weeks later, you would have the Belmont. And when you get into that 3 weeks in the Belmont, you're looking at being 3 weeks off of, or 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks off of the Breeders' Cup. You know, and so how do you plan, where do you go with your horses?
Well, it's the same you can say for basketball, for baseball, and I don't even want to say the words out of my mouth that what's going to happen with the football season. But provided things start to come back, they're all going to want to do abbreviated seasons, and everybody's going to, you know, cross over into their time periods, and they're just going to, I guess, hopefully learn how to bite the bullet and not worry and still hold on to these events, and the fans will make their choices on what they want to watch. But right now, if you don't have Netflix, you're stuck with regular TV.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things, like with the Thoroughbreds coming up, there's a lot of decisions to be made because, like, say, the Haskell and the Travers that come up in August, you know, in late summer. If they've got the Derby in September and the Haskell and, you know, the Travers all together, you got to really sit down and say, well, which one do I really want to win? Well, you know, most people say they like to win the Derby, but the Travers has a lot of impact on a horse at stud, when he goes to stud. You know, if you win in New York, the Belmont or the Travers, you know, some of the big races, that carries a lot of weight. And I don't know if the Derby's going to be diminished by being run in September, or if it's going to stay the same, or if it's going to get bigger.
If I'm correct, Scott, I think the only time the Derby wasn't run was in World War II. And I think other than that, the Derby's never been. The same goes with the Hamiltonian. I mean, it's moved its venue over the years, but it's almost always been that first Saturday in August, the same as the Derby's the first Saturday in May. But
well, you know, these
are different.
You're saying that about World War II. You know why they stopped it in World War II? They used Churchill Downs as an encampment for the military. They went into the infield, and they put up hundreds and hundreds of tents and thousands of soldiers that they housed on the ground, which is close to Fort Knox. And that, and that's why they did that. They turned it into a military installation.
Well, there you go. Well, we don't have that now, and hopefully we won't have to use all these makeshift hospitals that have been built. And but we still have to be prepared. That's the whole thing, is to be prepared for when the word go is given and that everything is in place.
Well, I see scheduling as one of the major drawbacks right now, is how do you schedule and how do you get brought up to speed, you know, with your season? There's going to come a time and point. Let's say it's August 1st that everybody's back up and racing. Do you continue on with the schedule as it normally would be from that point on, or do you rearrange, you know, races? How do you fit that in?
I don't know. I mean, I think in the thoroughbred business, you have only a minor luxury of time between races, whereas in harness racing, it's pretty much week after week. I mean, we had talked when we first started the broadcast, we had talked about the 2019 Harness Horse of the Year, Chartnan, and they had mapped out her schedule, and they announced what it was, how she was going to race and Yonkers for 6 weeks, and then take a month and a half off, come back, race another 6-7 weeks, and then that'll be it. There'll be maybe 15 starts she's going to be geared for, and that's what people have to do with their horses. They've got to gear towards the stakes, like you said, which one is most important in an abbreviated season. So yeah, they're going to go against each other, but They've got to be prepared and set dates. I mean, the Derby did it. They said, we're going to race on September 5th, regardless of what the Belmont and the Preakness want to do. And, you know, you'd hope they'd all fall in line, but, of course, there's NBC. And who calls the shots, Scott? The tracks or NBC?
NBC does. You know that. Just like we do here at IEN, we call the shots. Bob Baffert said the other day, they asked him about the Derby, you know, and what was, you know, what he thought about everything. He said, well, he said, we just got to accept what they, you know, they're going to give us. But he said, I'm telling you one thing right now. He said, I'm loaded. He said, I'm ready to go at the drop of a hat. So that's kind of scary when Bob Baffert says something like that. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to keep them horses ready to roll. And I think that's what all these trainers are going to have to do. They're going to have to be ready to go, you know, and be able to jump in there and get the job done.
Right. And that's why when a few people said, why are you even bothering holding these qualifying races? And people just started jumping right on them saying, you got to keep horses sharp. Because guess what?
Right.
If they say, hey, June or May 15th, three tracks are going to open, and you can say, heck, my horse just won qualifier 57-3 at the Olympia 5/8 mile, and I'm ready to race, and it's like you're in the box, boom. That's,
there you go, yeah.
And just like that Baffert said, people are getting their horses ready because – and I'm sure in a moment's notice, Sam Stafford will load up his trailer with all his qualified horses and send them to the Meadowlands or Yonkers or whatever is going to open because his horses will be ready to go and qualified as opposed to those that are
exactly
60 days out. You know, that's going to be important. And fortunately for some with the thoroughbreds, especially if you're in Florida, you're racing. You've got Gulfstream Park going with Fanless and the same as Tampa Bay Downs.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you're not getting much off schedule here in Florida, and that's the great thing about, you know, being, here in Florida. And as our state logo says, they'll be Florida fresh.
Florida they'll fresh.
Be Florida fresh and ready to go.
Now,
but, go ahead.
I wanted to ask you: Will the Breeders' Cup work with the Belmont and Preakness and them, and try and make it so that? I mean, now we're talking only for 3-year-olds in the Triple Crown. There's the Breeders' Cup is for everyone.
I'll be honest with you, Steve. I think all the trainers and all the owners are they almost have it for sure that the Breeders' Cup is going to stay on its regular scheduled date, you know, the first weekend in November. And mm-hmm. I think that most of these trainers are really going to be pointing more towards the Breeders' Cup than anything else, you know, because it's so far away that, you know, this thing could be over with, you know, in July or August, and then you still have, 2.5 months to get ready. And I think that's what all the thoroughbred people are starting to look at, making the Breeders' Cup day
so
the most important part of their training.
And then the rescheduling of these Grade 1 events so they hopefully don't coincide. It's not going to happen. They're just going to have to make a decision.
Right. I think a lot of the prestige is going to be taken out of the Derby, Preakness, and the Belmont. And some of these other races, just because of the virus, you know, there's going to be that asterisk, you know, there beside us.
But if these races can take off and get going, then a lot of people are going to have interest. I'd be surprised if it didn't have, maybe not the fan base that you think of, but when they get televised and stuff, people are going to be watching. Big time.
Exactly. And you know, like you and I have been talking about our projects that we have setting up for television and all like that. The sales, for example, read in the Blood Horse today that they're going to do a lot of internet sales, coming up where they'll be able to buy online, you know, from home. And you've had a horse out whether you go to the sale or whether you buy it online. An owner or a potential buyer sent somebody there to vet the horse out, you know, examine the horse, take a look at it and go from there. So one of the things that we're looking at last call, we would do 8 horses in an hour through an internet sale, do something like that. But more importantly, we would do that sale from that farm, from that location. It'll be all about their 8 horses and them, and not, 2,500 horses like they have at Keeneland or, Del Mar or Fazek Tipton. I'll be honest with you. I think that the television industry is going to be what saves horse racing. Because now we've got to get creative. We've got to develop a show, for each one of the breeds so that they can come out and be seen. And that's going to eliminate a lot of the people worrying about saying, oh, well, I don't want to go to the horse show in Wellington because there's too many people. Or go, you know, to the Derby or to the Hambo because of the amount of people that would be there. So if we construct something, you know, in a proper fashion, I think that we can get a lot of TV viewers, we can get a lot of radio listeners, you know, to come out and join us. Because I really just don't see them packing, you know, 10, 15, 20, 40, 50,000 people in any sporting event coming up in the next 6 months or to the end.
No, you're absolutely right. And I'm sure people still want to, no matter what, if it's the Derby, they want to get a wager in. In fact, exactly. I have to tell you, in Sweden, just last week, they had so much money bet. I want to say something outrageous, like a couple $1 million was bet in the, no, it was $500 million was put into the second race pool in Sweden. And the AGT that runs all the wagering and distribution, they crashed. Their whole system crashed. And they lost God knows how many millions of dollars because they couldn't take any wagers after the second race.
Right.
I think
you're right about that, Steve. I think that's a prime example there of not having to be on site, you know, to make the wagers. And,
right.
You know, that's what fuels the horse racing industry is the wagering. And, that's how they came up with the OTBs. They came up with them because they wanted to get that person that can't make it to the races. And
right.
So, you know, they've done that now. But now it's back onto, you know, the race industry. How do we get our product out there to, you know, to our customers? And it's going to be via internet, radio, and TV.
That's it. In other words, but I hate to see it that way. And whether I need to go to Gulfstream when it finally opens and see something racing live or on television, as long as they have a good product and they display it well, people will be attracted to it.
Right. Well, you know, when I was growing up, it was interesting. Every Thursday at Keeneland, they would have the featured race, and that's when the bluegrass was run on Thursday. And so we would be in the barn, and we'd turn it on our local AM station, and we would listen to the races and the recap. And so, you know, coming up like I did, you always look forward to Saturday because Saturday was the big race day. You know,
right.
All across the country, Santa Anita, Chicago, everywhere. And I think that what's going to happen with the horse industry is people are going to go back to, you know, that looking forward to going out to the track, going out to the horse shows, on Saturday, making a day out of it. And, Frank Stronach with Gulfstream and all his tracks, he's pretty much done that. He's got something for everybody at Gulfstream, whether you just want to get a hamburger and a beer, you know, and not have to spend a lot of money, or whether you want to go to a five-star restaurant. He has it all there. He covers all the economic and everybody at the track. And I think that's what's going to happen. They're going to start marketing Saturday as the big show day. And you know, from when you were at Pompano, what were your big days there for, having the big race?
It was absolutely Saturday. Absolutely,
yeah.
Saturday, because Pompano was the winter capital of harness racing. So from the start of the meet and through the winter, you know, we were one of the top attractions in harness racing, plus all the snowbirds that would come down here. I mean, our Wednesday dollar night, people would say, oh, my God, you have over 4,000 people here, and there's no track in the United States that comes close to that kind of attendance. I mean, they didn't, you know, they didn't all bet as much as you'd hoped for, but they had a good time and they come out strong. And that was because everything was set. And you know what? Looking at the future, I mean, I wonder how much that will change. All this will change for next year.
Oh, exactly. You know, and that's, you know, that's exactly why they have like the Derby and the Preakness of Belmont, the Breeders' Cups on Fridays and Saturdays, and the Hambos, you know, and all. They have them on those days that is really good for the consumer to come out. Now, I know in harness racing, they have a lot of the big races sometimes during the week. And I've noticed they still get a good crowd out there.
Well, the biggest one of all is usually the third Thursday in September is the Little Brown Jug. And that's such an institution in Ohio that the town, they close school and everything on that day. And the, you know, Columbus, Ohio, as long as you don't race against Ohio State football, and there's not a home game, but the Little Brown Jug does unbelievable 40,000, 50,000 people on a Thursday afternoon. So it just shows that if it's a good stake race, people are going to have interest in it. Doesn't matter what day it can be.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know, like for the thoroughbreds, on Thursday is a big day because today is all the days that they make all the entries for Saturday for the big stake races. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it gives people time to figure out whether they're going to go or whether they're going to stay at home or watch it on TV or what have you. But I think now if we seize the moment, you know, the Carpe Diem, just grab a hold of it right now, focus on, you know, Saturday for television programming. And I think that, you know, that will help stabilize, you know, the business of horse racing.
No, I agree with you. And all those stakes books, boy, they're going to have to get rewritten.
Don't you know there's some racing secretaries and management scratching their heads right now?
Can imagine. Yeah, because all the stakes books are out.
Well,
so now
well
that's
at least
what
we know
talked
one
about
thing.
Earlier. Go ahead.
We know one thing now, the printing companies aren't laying nobody off because they're going to have an awful lot of condition books and programs saying and things to print up here.
My mail has been almost a pleasure opening it and just getting a bill and no political stuff, no advertisements, you know, no anything right now. Right. And like you said, they're probably going to triple up when things get, people get going outside again. Begin socializing, the mailbox won't be able to hold it all.
Oh, exactly. Well, Steve, next week, and I'm not going to say who or what or where, but we're going to have some good things on the show next week. We're going to do a little bit of an international flavor, a project that was started from scratch in the last few months of the last year. And it's having an overwhelming success. And it just goes to show you if you market and you plan properly and you don't get greedy, it can work. And it's going to be exciting, and it's going to really wake a lot of people up in the thoroughbred business. And I think you're going to see a lot more of what they're doing throughout the world.
Well, I understand that, and I'm looking forward to it. That'll be it'll be a showstopper next week, that's for sure, if I keep my mouth shut.
Yeah. Well, I think that's not going to be a problem, but, you know, it encompasses everything in the thoroughbred business that you could do in one spot. And, you know, that's like jumping ship here to the show horse industry. I talked to some people this morning that had been up to the World Equestrian Center in Ocala. That's 4,000 acres, Steve, show grounds, of hotel, you know, restaurant, a church, campgrounds. Mrs. Roberts and R&L have really made this a horseman's paradise. And they have another one in Ohio, too. It's just like it. But, you know, just imagine 4,000 acres of land there just for horses, you know, showing and what have you. They've got five indoor air-conditioned arenas. And this place is just phenomenal. And these are Olympic-sized arenas, you know, so it's they're huge. And it, again, it goes back to show you if you have a product and you build that product from the ground up with the consumer in mind, with the horse and equestrian fans in mind, give them what they need and what they want, they're going to come, you know, day in and day out, you know, to them. Now, they had 10,000 stalls available at the World Equestrian Center in Ocala.
Wow.
For 2021. And then a press release they had last month, they had all 10,000 stalls obligated. They had all 10,000 stalls sold out for the 2021
wow.
season. Now, you can imagine somebody doing that, you know, months in advance. But it's a facility. They go there. They don't have to leave the facility for anything. They got a grocery store there, a church. They got any and everything a horseman can need. It's its own little city, you know. And I think that if that theory is applied to harness racing and thoroughbred racing, not saying you got to build all that for, you know, for each track, but if you give the consumer a product that they want and that they can, you know, enjoy themselves, at, they're going to come day in and day out.
No, you're right, and I was fortunate this year. I'll make it quick that I was able to go to Paris, France, for the Big Prix de Marie race at the Vincennes racetrack. But nearby,
right.
Grosbois, the training facility there. I mean, it's only 1,000 acres, but it has 5 miles of jogging track and 3 different surface types. You know, hard 2 5/8 mile and a mile track just for qualifying, and the equine hospitals and all the stuff. Like you said, it was a place where you almost didn't have to leave, you know, because it was all there. And that could happen, but it needs to be by the racetrack, you know, within somewhat of a close facility. What they have in Wellington is
right.
is just unbelievable. And I feel bad yeah. because all the stalls were, like you said, leased out, and I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars have been spent, you know, and no place to go. That's the big problem.
Right. Well, you know, we'll eventually we're going to get into Tryon, North Carolina, where Mark Bellissimo, who built Wellington, he went to Tryon, North Carolina, and there was literally nothing. It's out in the middle of nowhere. And he has built a facility there that is second to none. You know, it's right up there with the World Equestrian Center. It brought thousands of jobs to North Carolina. And I'm telling you, Mark Bellissimo could run for governor in North Carolina, and they would elect him for what he did building that showground. And again, it goes back to show you that if you build and you give the consumer, whether you're a horseman or not, something for value, something to entertain them, they will go to it.
I believe you. I certainly believe you. Before we sign off here, any more teasing you can do for next week? We want to keep the fans on their feet.
Well,
edge of their seat.
Well, put it to you this way. If they tune into the show next week, I would suggest that they sit back in the lawn chair in the outdoors and get a rum runner.
There you go, a rum runner with a floater. That's what I could use.
That's right. Get that rum runner out, and I guarantee you, after you hear our show next week, you will seriously be thinking about changing your vacation plans.
Okay. That sounds good. And I think we're going to call it a wrap here. I mean, Don
there
hasn't come on to tell us yet, but Again, it's been a good show, Scott, and appreciate everything. Your knowledge with what's going on here is superb. I just wish we could get a date to get racing going again.
Oh, I agree with you, and I thank you for all the things that you brought to the table and the ideas and thinking outside the box. You know, what we do, I think the guys at BBS, it's tremendous what they're doing, you know, for us. And, you know, we're growing slowly, and I just wish some of our listeners would call in to us and make suggestions to us what we need to do and how we should change it. You know, I'm going to have to talk to your wife again because she's got some pretty good ideas.
Well, let me tell you this. We're going to have to sign off now, and but okay, please, fans, racing fans, come on. Listen to it next week, Thursday, 1 o'clock. It's going to be a heck of a show.
Thanks to everybody there, and everybody stay safe.